Stories, stories, stories. We're going to be talking about stories today. But I want to start by welcoming you to the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown, broadcasting from Midtown with people involved with us from all over the world. We're really excited that you're here, exciting to find out that you chose to spend some of your time here with us, whether it's sitting on your couch and watching right now or watching us later on YouTube or listening to us in the car. Don't do the meditation part in the car, but anything else. And that's wonderful. We're glad you're here. We're here to remind you and to remind all of us that such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity. So am I, and so it is. We've opened that our services with that statement now for many years, but long before I was doing this back in the day, and it has always rung so deep and so true. Life only wants one thing, and that is to live. God only wants one thing, and that is to express itself in us, as us, and through us. Because we know that's true, then we know who you are. We know you are a vehicle, an opportunity for spirit, God, life, whatever word you use, to express itself through the things you love, through the things you enjoy, through those areas and avenues of identity and identification as you describe yourself to yourself and to the rest of us as to who you are and how you live and what you're about. Whatever your gender, whatever your race, whatever your ethnicity, we honor and support you because you are an expression of the infinite. And so is everyone else. And so it is that we can honor and support the beauty and power of each one as we go forward. So welcome. We believe in a new thought teaching. We believe in a philosophy of that, of oneness, of the unity of all life, and we believe in you. So join me now and read together, if you'd like, the Declaration of Principles. These are a few of the basic principles that we operate upon and that direct all of our work and our thinking and our teaching. I believe in one God, one absolute power and first cause to all things. I believe that this power is perfect love and creates out of a desire to express love. I believe all thought is creative, and how I choose to think creates my personal experience. I believe in the unity of all life and the immortality of the individual soul forever unfolding. I believe in the eternal goodness and the eternal loving kindness and the eternal givingness of God to all. And so it is. We have within our organization people who are well educated, well trained, and have been using these ideas and these principles to bring about greater life expression and a greater life experience for themselves and for others. So as they have done that, our national, international organization has also chosen to license them. We call them spiritual mind treatment practitioners or religious science practitioners or science of mind practitioners. They go through by a lot of different names, but they are practitioners because they practice the principles of this teaching on behalf of themselves and others, and they are available to you to reach out and to receive support and assistance in achieving the dreams and goals of your life. Today, we have one of our wonderful practitioners who will be here with us now sharing some good ideas and leading us in a spiritual mind treatment or affirmative prayer. So I am happy to present to you Lee Huffman. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bob. I just realized that I was on mute there. Caught it as you turned it over to me. So thank you, Bob, and thank you. Welcome to everyone here. We are definitely pleased to have you here as part of CSL Midtown on the virtual web. And it has been, I'm not even sure how long it's been that I've been with CSL. And I just love this teaching because every corner I turn, I learn more and more that this teaching is everywhere. all the books. I have a partner, a business partner in the UK, and he was talking about his belief system. And I was actually pretty young in Science of Mind, in religious science. And I just opened my eyes like, this guy knows this stuff. He had never heard of Ernest Holmes. He had never heard of Science of Mind. He said all of his teaching, all of his understanding, all of his faith came from nature and from other readings that he had done. And none of them were all that spiritual, except he was a spiritual man. So a great friend in the UK. And I hope to get together back with him and others soon, now that we can travel a little bit more. So the reading, like I said, you find this everywhere. And one of the books that we had as we were coming on as practitioners going through our training, which is about a 4-year program, was The Four Agreements, which I can't get in focus here, by Don Miguel Ruiz. And I won't go through all four agreements, but I will touch on the first one, and then I'll talk about the second one. And the first one is be impeccable with your word. And the reason I always like to talk about that is because we need to be impeccable with our word with ourselves. We need to be impeccable with our word with God, because the universe cannot give us something if we aren't clear as to what we desire and what we want. And the second one, so let's be impeccable with our word. Be impeccable with what you desire from the universe. When you pray, when you have spiritual mind treatment, be clear. Because the universe will just say yes to everything. And sometimes the things that we fear and the things that we love and the things that we desire cancel each other out. And we end up right here where we're at. And so I've found more and more every year that this teaching is solid in that. So I welcome everyone. So that's number one. The second one is don't take anything personally. And the reason that this one is here, I believe, is because if we take things personally, if we take what other people say, then it confuses us. We believe their crap, and we end up taking it in and it becomes part of our truth. And the universe says, okay, I'll give you more. So this is what Don Miguel Ruiz says. I'm on page 56. If you have the book sometime, then don't take anything personally, because by taking things personally, you set yourself up to suffer. You set yourself up to suffer for nothing. Humans are addicted to suffering at different levels and to different degrees. We support each other in maintaining these addictions. Skipping on down to the bottom of the page. Even if others lie to you, it is okay. Because in that support, people lie to each other. They are lying to you because they are afraid. Then to the bottom of the next page. When you make a strong habit not to take anything personally, you avoid many upsets in your life. Your anger, your jealousy, your envy will disappear. And even your sadness will simply disappear if you don't think things. If you can make the second agreement a habit, you will find that nothing can put you back into hell. There is a huge amount of freedom that comes to you when you do not take things personally. The whole world can gossip about you, and if you do not take things personally, you're immune. Someone can intentionally send emotional poison to you, and if you don't take it personally, you will not eat it. When you don't take emotional poison, it becomes even worse in the sender, but not in you. You can see how important this agreement is. Taking nothing personally helps you break many habits, routines, and that can trap you in the dream of hell and cause needless suffering. Just practicing the second agreement, you begin to break dozens of teeny tiny agreements that cause you to suffer. And if you practice the first two agreements, being impeccable with your word and not taking things personally, you will break 75% of the tiny, teeny agreements that keep you trapped in hell. So write this agreement on paper and put it onto your refrigerator to remind you all the time, do not take anything personally. I've taken so much personally in my life. And that's why I love the talk that Bob's going to give, because it's about clearing out this crap in my mind and giving me the freedom to live the life that is intended for me, that I desire and deserve. Spiritual mind treatment, as Bob indicated, is an affirmative prayer. It is what we do to help ourselves and get our minds right. And in, as a practitioner, when I'm treating for other people, I will treat just like I'm about to treat. I will say it in my own, because I can't treat somebody else's mind. They have to do it themselves. But I'll give a guidance with the words that I use to what I believe, what I feel, how I treat my mind for them and the understanding of them. And they can take whatever resonates with them. And if it doesn't resonate with them, they can go on and just let it go. So I ask you to do the same thing. Take from this treatment whatever resonates with you. And if it doesn't resonate with you, let it go. Let it slide by. Don't take it personally. I hadn't thought about that. Don't take it personally. So let's relax a bit. Get our feet on the ground or lay back or whatever you're doing in this environment that we're in. And know this with me, if you will. There is one God, one source, one creator. This source is love, and it creates out of the desire to express love, as we say in our statement of faith. I am one with God. I am one with source because everything in the universe comes from God. My thought creates the world that I live in. Therefore, I choose to think about what I desire, not about things I do not desire. I am impeccable with my word. I think of love, freedom, prosperity, of the abundance that is mine, of everything that I desire and deserve. Nothing can block my getting what I desire and deserve. Not the news, not the internet, not well-meaning friends, not my background or my fears. I am love. I am freedom. I am prosperity. I am abundance. I am all that I desire right here and right now. This is all that I need to know. I release these words into the universe knowing that this is my truth, and this is the truth that will help set me free. And together we say, and so it is. The next song is Let Your Life Lead You Where You Want to Go. And it's amazing.
Start losing my smile, and I say to myself, what's the deal? What exactly is the point? Getting all out of joint, not liking the way that I feel. Maybe I believe that it's all up to me, at the helm of this boat all alone, till some stormy detail takes the wind from my sail to remind me what I've always known. Relax and let the river flow. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go. You're swimming upstream, chasing a dream. Make sure that it comes from the heart. If you're fighting the tide for glory and fame, you might just be working too hard. Are you winning the race? Are you swimming in place and still falling further behind? There's a current below that knows where to go, might carry you to peace of mind. Ah, relax and let the river flow. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go. Let your life teach you what you need to know. Let your life lead you where you need to go.
There's a great story. It was circulating on the internet a few years ago that went something like this. Apparently, a young man in his late 30s stepped upon a train and got on a train in New York, one of the subways. He had his two kids with him, and they were in there. They were youngish, 5, 7, something like that, and sat down and sort of sat and just started staring into the distance and seemed to be totally oblivious to what his kids were doing. They got pretty rambunctious and wild and were chasing each other up and down the area. It must have been a Sunday morning to have room on a New York subway to chase each other, but they did. And they ran about and they carried on and they made lots of noise and they annoyed the other passengers. And the other passengers were giving the dirty looks to the guy, just like people do, trying to get those social signals going, and he just was not noticing, without paying attention. He looked a little disheveled, and he didn't look like he'd had a bath in a few days. And so the person sitting next to him on the train began to worry a little bit and leaned over and said, "You know, you really need to do something about your children. They are causing a great disturbance on this train." And the man sort of shook his head and seemed to wake up out of a daze. And he looked to see where the kids were, and they were kind of down in the middle of the train, headed back his way and making lots of noise. And he leaned over and whispered to the man, "Their mother just died in the hospital, and I'm trying to figure out how in the world I'm going to tell them." And I know, because you're human and I'm human, that we have all been in situations where we made up stories in our heads about what was happening around us, only to discover shortly that it was the total opposite, perhaps, of what we thought. See, that's what our minds are programmed for. That's what our minds are designed to do, especially when we're operating in consciousness at the level, that first level of consciousness, which is about survival, which is about living in the present moment in the physical world. Our mind is constantly at work, filling in the blanks and answering questions. I considered giving you guys about 30 seconds of silence at the beginning of my talk, just to see what stories you would be making up in your heads about what's wrong. Why isn't he talking? Doesn't he know that you don't dare have downtime on broadcasts? It must mean something's wrong if there is one, et cetera, et cetera. We all make up stories. And they're based on our past, and they're based on usually fear or concern of some sort of a problem or negative idea. When I was a young minister in this teaching and had just started out, and you may remember, some of you that are old enough, that we used to meet in this strange thing where we got into a big auditorium together and sat next to one another and could see each other and smell and touch and feel and know each other's presence. Well, in that setting, the speaker, as the speaker, I got immediate feedback. I could see the faces of all the people in the audience because I was up front. And there would always be a few people. The more I talked, the more they scowled. And one man in particular just used to bug the daylights out of me because I kept trying not to look at him, look anywhere but at him. But I still found myself checking him out to see if I had made him smile or see if he'd gotten the joke or see if he was seemingly paying attention. And he would always be seemingly paying attention and always be scowling. And the more I talked, the more he scowled. And I thought, okay, this guy does not like me. I do not want him on my board. I don't know who he is, but I need to make sure, you know. And I went through all this crazy stuff in my head. And then finally, one day, as he was leaving the service, and as we were actually, we were talking over coffee after the service, he said, you know, I just want to tell you that I absolutely love and adore your talks. And what I like about them is they really make me stop and think. And think about and measure what you're saying against my own thought and my own ideas and the stuff going on in my head. And I get really deep into that. And as he's talking, he's scowling more and more about this. And it clicked. When he concentrates, he scowls. And I realized that maybe all of those people in the congregation who were scowling at me were not scowling at me at all. But their faces were showing their concentration and the depth of which they were working on the thoughts and ideas that they were hearing. Totally changed my perspective. Then became just as important to get a scowl as it did to get a laugh. When I was still worried a whole lot about the congregation and how they responded. Of course, in this situation, I can't see you. You might be scowling. You might be laughing. You might be getting your coffee. I don't know. I'm still speaking what matters to me, though. And it's fascinating how our stories that we tell ourselves about situations, about what we hear on the news, about what we see in events, all of that stuff is made up. And we make it up out of our past, out of our expectations, out of some idea of what we want things to be, what we need things to be, or what we're afraid they might be. And so our stories come out of this fear, come out of this attempt to find a safe space in a crazy world. Often, much of us may think of the world as that. I do sometimes. For a while, I had my alarm clock set so it would wake me up to the weather report, and then it would be followed by the news headlines. Well, that's crazy making. You wake up hearing the news headlines, and that's all you hear is the headline, and you can imagine all sorts of things. If you believe the headlines, the whole of Europe is now underwater and sinking. Well, that ain't true. Yeah, it's got flooding. That's different than underwater and sinking. So our point today and our work today and our talk today is really about freeing our minds, and the rest will follow. freeing our minds from those challenging, disturbing stories we tell ourselves about our limitations, about other people's limitations, about what's wrong in the world, about how terrible it is. I came from a tradition as a therapist. That was my work, and one of the axioms of that was, if you get a good diagnosis, then you'll have a good treatment, or good process, or good progress. Because if you really understand the problem, then you'll find the very best solution. You'll know what theories to apply. You'll know how to speak to the person. You know what the language needs to be. You know how to appeal to the various parts of them that needs to shift and change, or that they want to see shift and change. And I discovered over time that I didn't always know what the best diagnosis was, but I always knew what the best solutions were for them, because they were telling me what they were, directly and indirectly. See, we live in a world of distrust. We have established that if we can just figure out what's really going on instead of what seems to be going on, we'll have a better handle, a better heads up, and a better foot up on creating a better life for ourselves, a safer life, a freer life, a more prosperous life. And so we have this idea we need to free our minds. And it's true. It's a correct idea as far as it goes. So we do need to free our minds. We need to free our minds from those stories that we're constantly telling ourselves about how bad it all is. And how it's interesting, if once you get that kind of roll going, every kind of collection of facts will lead you to continue to support that idea that life's awful and it's terrible and things are horrible and you're dumb and whatever other messages and stories you're telling yourself about yourself. I'm not smart enough. I'm too fat. I'm too stupid. I'm not born in the right time. And then I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other. And the rest of the world just... And the more we tell ourselves the stories, the more we find evidence on the outside to support it. We need to free ourselves of that. We need to free ourselves of prejudice, of the prejudices we have towards ourselves, towards other people, just based on the color of their skin or the things they say or the way they talk or whether they walk funny or their preferences or anything else about them. We need to free ourselves from fear. We need to free our minds from fear. Our mind is a fear-generated process. As soon as fear kicks in, the mind goes to work to find solutions, to find ways around it, to find ways to protect us. That's its job, especially at the ego level, at the consciousness level one. That is its job. And it does it very well. And mind does it really well sometimes, too well. We need to free ourselves of that. I need to free myself of my preferred algorithm. Did you know you have a preferred algorithm? If you've ever clicked on any of your social media on the thing you prefer, and you do that by what you choose to watch, and you do that by the things you hit like on, and every time you do, there are some very sophisticated systems, both computer and people, who look at that and from that decide what else to share with you that will match what you like. And we've fallen into a world where we're often only listening to our algorithm, what our algorithm tells us. If you're a Democrat and a liberal, you only listen to the Democrat liberal news reports. And if you see the other stuff, it just makes you mad. The same thing if you're a Republican and if you're a Trump supporter and if you're a person in that mindset, then you are looking to news media and social media and other people who agree with you. And then they continue to agree and we continue to build a stronger belief system around that stuff. And it's a closed system and it doesn't allow any comparison or conversation with the other algorithms. And it's quite sneaky the way it works. Or if we do click on the other group's algorithm or the other group's accounting of something, it's really to see how they did it wrong or what mistakes they made. And the longer this world continues to do that, and the stronger we build our own inner algorithm of what's true and what's not true, the further that gap of reaching across the aisle, whatever the aisle is, political, emotional, social, socioeconomic, all of those dividers, the harder it is to reach across and the further we have to reach. But reach we must. Because, see, freeing your mind is not just about freeing it from something. Freedom actually is only a nonsensical word until you use it somehow. Freedom doesn't mean much until you do something with it. I can have all the freedom in the world, but if I don't exercise it and act on it, it's just sitting there being latent, non-developed. So you free your mind to do something. What do you free it to? I free it to creativity. I free it to look at any situation, Holmes said. Look at any discordant situation until you know better. Keep looking at it. Keep looking through it until a better idea shows up. Free your mind to possibility. Yes, but... this is what I'm told. Yes, but this is the story I'm telling myself. Yes, but something in me knows better. Yes, but something in me knows better. Free our minds to reach to that greater possibility, to that greater probability, to that greater love, to that greater creativity, to that greater passion and compassion. To that greater story of possibility of what could be. How many of us get up in the morning and listen to the news and then tell ourselves stories of how life can be, of how life could be, how life should be for us, where prosperity flows freely, where everyone has enough, if that's your better story? And we all have the ability to do that. We all have that as part of our minds, part of our consciousness. So when we talk about what the mind, this limited version of mind, we're talking about it as that one level, that level one of consciousness where everything is done to me and has to be done, as, you know, has to be done around me, and it's physical, and it's what is my body telling me, it's all that kind of stuff. How do I protect myself in this world of right and wrong, good and bad? But we all have more to our minds than that. There's another part of our mind that is much bigger, much larger, much more compassionate, much more connected to bigger ideas. Einstein said that you know, no problem is ever solved at the level of thought that created it. You've got to get out of that level that created the problem, that sees the problem, by allowing your mind to lift to a higher, greater, broader, bigger, wider perspective. Now, we do that automatically without knowing anything about science of mind or this teaching or any of it. Think about it. You're struggling with a problem. What's your grandma say, do? Oh, son, just sleep on it and you'll have a better idea in the morning. You're like, yeah, as if sleeping would even happen while I'm worrying about this. But if you can, and you can sleep on it, it's interesting how in the morning you have solutions. Take a break. We do that automatically. Let's just take, you're working on something and it's just not happening. It's not going well. You go take a walk. Get out in nature. Get out in the sunshine. Feel the air on your skin. And just let your mind go somewhere else altogether. Get out of the this or that, the right or wrong. There's right. Am I doing it? Am I not doing it? How's it working? And poof. 9 times out of 10, the solution begins to show up, and it shows up at a whole different way, an approach to thinking. My talks develop that way. I work on them, and I work on them, and then I forget about them. spend a day or two, just not even thinking about it at all. And then in the midst, suddenly I begin to have new ideas, new versions, and bigger pictures that start showing up. And I start noticing that and jotting it down. And then when I bring it all back together, it's pretty amazing how the bigger, better ideas came in that second aspect, that second level, where I've gotten past the by me and into the through me consciousness, where it comes through me with new ideas, new thought, new feelings, new expressions. So we do it automatically, because that's what our minds, how they are built, how we have operated as a human race and grown over these eons that we've been a human race. So we already know how to clear our minds. So why not be intentional about that? Why not take charge of the reset? How about choosing things differently than the algorithms, than living in that either or fear-based way of thinking? What about choosing to think differently? That's what this teaching is all about. Emmett Fox, one of the early teachers in divine science, said, don't think about the problem. Think about God. Think about God, not the problem. Now, that sounds escapist to some people, and it sounds like you're just avoiding the problem, but that's not the point. Because there's a whole lot of other stuff he says that leads up to that. And what he's leading to and what he's talking about is, rather than staying bogged down in trying to figure out the problem, think about all the attributes, all of the ideas and understandings of your best and highest and greatest idea of what ultimate reality is and ultimate power. God is just a symbol. It's just a symbolic word for what we really believe to be in the highest and greatest and best good for all of us. And what we really, in our heart of hearts, that perhaps we don't even dare say to anyone else, believe is what really is valuable and important. Emma Curtis Hopkins, the teacher of teachers, one of Ernest Holmes, was one of her, or she was one of his last students. Anyway, I said it backwards. He was one of her last students. She taught the founders of many of the New Thought movement leaderships and groups and things that have emerged over the years since then. And she said, your good, what you really know and believe and think of as your good, is your God. What matters the most to you is your God. Does it matter the most to you to be divided and fighting? Or does it matter the most to you the harmony, the joy, and the love that you feel in certain settings and situations? And without attaching those to the situation, it's the love itself that matters. I work with people sometimes, and one of the things that comes to me often is dealing with relationships. And someone will say, I've just not met the right person to fall in love. Or I fell in love and I've never fallen in love again. And what I always remind people is that love that you're talking about, it didn't exist out there somewhere and suddenly fell on you or into you because you fell in love. But it was already there in you, and you fell into the awareness of you as a loving being, in a way that you freely could express it. And that other person simply gave you the possibility and the opportunity. The love is already there. If that's your God, if that love and that feeling of passion and compassion is what and who God is, then think about that. Instead of thinking about all the people that don't like you. Or in my case, thinking about the grumpy guy on the front row, or at least who I thought was grumpy. Little did I know he was loving me in deep and meaningful ways, because I had the story going that shut out the better, bigger picture. So it's kind of like today's talk is about in pulling towards your vision, being pulled towards your vision of a greater life and a greater good for you, and greater prosperity or greater work or whatever that is. We've got to let these stories go in order to get have emerge within us the version of ourselves that allows us to embrace the good that we already have, that we already are, the God that we already are. Ernest Holmes says this about it. The highest realization that we can have is a recognition of the omnipresence, that means the everywhere, always presence of spirit, of life, of God, of your good, will set free greater possibilities in motion and will automatically provide a better concept of life. Automatically. You don't need to make it happen because it's already there. That's why in spiritual mind treatment, we release it. We know it's already there and already done and happening in mind, and it's just a matter of watching and excitedly waiting for that which we are desiring to show up, because we have come to believe that it is ours by right of consciousness. That's what treatment's all about. Well, part of what it's about. So we use spiritual mind treatment, and we use one of the powerful things about spiritual mind treatment. It uses this particular version of life in a very powerful and potent way, because we start with the mind reset. We start with God is, spirit is, life is, and we define to ourselves, what is my greatest good according to my deepest, most powerful, and most honest understanding of it? If it is love, if God is love, then I have to be an expression of love. I am born of love. I am created as a result of love. However distorted you may have that as part of your story, it's still love and it's still there. I am created of love. Therefore, I am becoming love. I can be love. And love expresses as me in this way, whatever this way is for you. So that spiritual mind treatment or affirmative prayer becomes a great tool for freeing our minds and allowing the rest to follow. Spiritual mind treatment is a way to start with what is the highest and greatest good, to claim our unity with it, and in that unity decide and choose, how shall that I express that infinite that is within me? Or how shall I allow it to express itself through me? And being pulled by our vision, one of the most powerful questions is always, what does spirit, life, God want to be as me right now? And that's not about giving up things that we don't want to give up. It's not about suffering. All of that stuff's gone out the window. This is about enjoy and freedom and power. What is it that life wants to express most fully through me? What is it? What gets my attention? What goes, oh, yeah, that's what I'd like to see happen. That's what I'd like to see to contribute to a world that works for everyone, not just for my particular thing. So we go bigger and broader and larger and louder about all of that. The omnipresence, just taking time to recognize it. Some of our earlier teachers used to say, if you get the first step of treatment right, that's all you need. This spirit of God that is present everywhere is present in me right now. It is everywhere. It is all there is. It's the whole story. And all these things we see in the world that may seem to be about two-ness are really about people struggling to find that way to embody the oneness that is all. And if I can keep coming back to, there's a power within me, there's a power for good greater than I am, and I can use it, and it uses me. I am open and receptive to the good that God is showing up as me. Or as my teacher used to say, I'm God's opportunity to have a great, fun-filled time. God shows up as me in fun and joy and goodness that costs nobody anything. So, I always return to there's something in me that knows, and I demand to have that revealed to me right now. And once I make that demand, then I walk away from it, knowing that that it will show up. You know, the ancients already knew this. This is not news. It is new thought because we're putting it together in new ways with the way we talk about things, but it goes way back into the Bible, the Christian Bible, where the writing has gone through all of these descriptions about the flowers. They don't worry about how they look. Now, I spent some time in front of the mirror today, and I'm sure you're grateful for that. Believe me, I am. However, we all do that. We worry about our clothing, our raiment, as they called it, the raiment. That's an old-fashioned word for clothes. They don't worry about that. They just grow and become who they are. Flowers and roses, and they don't worry about where the rain's going to come from. They just thrive when the rain's there and don't if it's not. So after all of this discussion about how trusting the universe, trusting life, trusting is all you need, it closes with this phrase. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. And heaven is that state of consciousness in which the power of the one and the power of peace and the power of all the attributes we give to God are present, whether we use the God word or not. Seek ye first the kingdom of oneness, the kingdom of unity, the kingdom of life, or the queendom, and all of these other things will be added unto you that you worry about. Think about God. Don't think about the question. And you don't even have to have the answer ahead of time, other than something in me knows, and God knows, life knows, spirit knows, the adventure of consciousness knows, my subjective mind knows, because my subjective unconscious mind is fully immersed in the mind that is God. So whatever level of that, you don't have to be particularly religious or believe in a God out there anyway. You certainly don't need to believe in a God out there for that to be true. That's what it means when we talk about walking by faith, not by sight. You look down, you walk by faith. To walk by sight, you look down, you see if there's a place to step, and you take the step. Walking by faith is you're looking where you're going and you're stepping out, knowing that as you fall forward onto your foot, you'll be supported. And then you take another step. We all walk in faith because we all walk by falling forward. It is our very nature to live this way. So I invite you to do so. You deserve it. Because you are absolutely wonderful. You are the expression of the infinite, being something unique. And so am I. And so it is. Thank you. And now, let's hear from Lee.
Thank you, Bob. That was amazing. Some people think that we might coordinate some of these discussions, but we really don't do it that much. And I guess I want to share that because I didn't know what story Bob was going to open with. But when I mentioned my friend Tony, my partner in business in the UK, one of the things that connected me with him was a story that Bob just told. And so let's take a look at the abundance of prosperity and bring that up for us. And whoops, I just got out of line. This is supposed to be announcements. Sorry, I misled you. There we go. The announcements. The theme for July is Pulled by Vision. And so next Sunday will be Stayed by Bob Dean. And we will enjoy that. So join us on Zoom after the celebration for a discussion. It's quite amazing to have that discussion. And for those of you that are watching this on Facebook, you can see us live or you can see us recorded later on. So check your email. There's an invitation for a social that's coming up on the 6th. And on the 25th. And that is for us to get together as a group. And please respond back to that. We're trying to get a head count as to how many people will be there. And that will be amazing. So we know that there is abundance all around us. So now we go to the one on abundance and prosperity. And I want to ask you to join me in this affirmation of prosperity. We give to this universe, and so the universe gives back to us. I live in the universe of abundance. I freely and joyfully give as I join in the divine flow. And all that I share with life returns to me, multiplied abundantly. And so it is. As you can see, you can give donations to our center at the website and just click on the donate button. And we appreciate that so much. Your contributions are definitely appreciated.
And it's time for everybody's favorite fun game, announcements, announcements, announcements. Hey, stay in touch with the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown through our newsletter. Get one email a week letting you stay informed. And please subscribe when visiting YouTube to our YouTube channel. Those subscriptions go a long, long way. And while you're on your social media, why not give us a like and a share on Facebook? Let your friends know what we're doing. Invite them to come watch our services with you. And join us on our Zoom room throughout the week. We offer a variety of Zoom interaction opportunities each and every week here as part of the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown. 10 a.m. Sunday is our discussion group around the 365 Science of Mind book. Every Sunday, 12 noon Sundays, our community fellowship immediately following our Sunday services. And 12 noon on Tuesday, our online empowerment opportunity. The access room information remains the same for all of our Zoom experiences. If you need access, please visit cslmidtown.org and you'll find access information on our website. Join us on any of our Zoom opportunities throughout the week. And while you're with us, be sure to connect with one of our professional practitioners. These are folks that are highly trained to support you along your spiritual journey. You can learn more on our website about our professional practitioners. Just head over to cslmidtown.org, click on About and Practitioners. Then you'll see their bios and a way to reach them and learn a little bit more about each of them. And please send us your prayer requests. Click on the home tab and look for affirmative treatment prayer requests. Fill out the form, send it off, and get our professional practitioners praying for you each and every day. All right.
Thank you for being here. I trust you found it meaningful and useful and helpful. It has certainly been fun for me to share these ideas because they take me back to remembering who I am and what I'm about. So join me, if you will, in our affirmation of life as we say together, I leave this place knowing something better than I knew before. I go forth into the world with a heart full of love and a mind full of good sense. I look at the world in a greater way, knowing that I have within me everything I need to create the life I desire. I give thanks for this understanding, and I am grateful for the Spirit of life that lives through me. And so it is. Thank you. See you next week.